With Montana News, I'm Sean Robb. Journalist and author Hedrick Smith recently delivered a president's lecture at the University of Montana about the widespread political disaffection in America. Smith won the Pulitzer Prize for international reporting while covering Russia and Eastern Europe for the New York Times. After his newspaper career, he went on to win Emmys for his work on the award-winning PBS Frontline series. Sally Mock sat down with Smith in our studios to get his take on this historic campaign season.
Mr. Smith, I want to talk first politics. You have said that both Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, the phenomenon of their campaigns, and I think they both are phenomenons, are canaries in a coal mine. What do you mean?
People tend to focus, and the media especially focuses, on the personalities and what the individuals stand for and how they're doing, particularly in the delegate count and how much the percentage of the popular vote they're getting and so forth. But to me, looking at America, they offer us an MRI, an X-ray into the country, because the astounding popularity of both of them, quite unexpected, and in Trump's case, overthrowing establishment candidates, and in Bernie's case, sustaining a strong support all across the country and challenging Hillary Clinton very much more vigorously and successfully than either he or lots of other people expected, is an indication of a groundswell of public frustration, anger, disenchantment, and a mark of the division in this country in terms of economics and power.
I think one of the mysteries of this campaign is that both Trump and Sanders supporters have the same anxiety in common. Is that fair to say, do you think?
I think that's true for a lot of it, yes. There are some academic studies that suggest when there's an acute economic stress and distress, people tend to break towards the extreme in opposite directions. So I think, yes, that's right. People do respond differently. And the Trump approach is basically to point the finger at somebody else. It's the Mexicans, it's the Chinese and the cheap Asian labor. It's Muslims, it's some outsiders, or it's President Obama. It's somebody else who's caused your problem. The problem actually exists within our economic system. We have a very top-down system now that's serving the 1% beautifully, but not serving the middle class. Sanders is taking an opposite approach, which is to say, let's do something for the minimum wage. Let's do something for the cost of kids' education and student debt. Let's do something for the cost of healthcare. In other words, we're going to boost the middle class by giving them government programs and collective action, which is going to improve their economic situation, a much more practical and pragmatic approach. And Trump's is much more blaming others and finger-pointing. That's the break in the opposite directions. But the cause is, as you said, similar.
You mentioned that people are suffering from disenchantment. You have said, and others have said, that that kind of malaise, I guess you would call it, can be lethal to a society.
John Gardner, the former head of Common Cause, the founder of Common Cause, who was a Republican who sat in Lyndon Johnson's cabinet back in the 60s, said about a decade ago, before we went into the financial collapse of 2008, he said, we're trotting the edge of a precipice here. Civilizations die of disenchantment. If enough people lose faith in their society, the whole thing begins to fall apart. Those are big words. We're not talking about this party's not going to do well or we're about to dip into a recession. He's talking about the society coming apart. And the British historian Arnold Toynbee talks about societies at certain points, great civilizations, being torn apart by what he calls schisms in the soul of the society. I think we're seeing that. I think we're seeing something very fundamental, very serious. This is a really serious disaster we're facing. We've got an economy and a political system that is not serving tens of millions, if not more than 100 or maybe 150 million Americans very well. When a system starts to fail to that degree, it is much bigger than a campaign issue in an individual campaign. This is something we're going to have to cope with over the next couple of decades and find ways to repair the economic and political damage that's been done over the last quarter century.
In your book, Who Stole the American Dream, you talk about the change in America between what was a stakeholder capitalism to a shareholder capitalism. Explain that.
It's a very important concept. If you go back and read, as I did, the comments of the CEOs of major American corporations, General Motors, General Electric, DuPont, in the 1950s and 60s, they believed their job was to balance the economic interests of the various stakeholders in the corporation, that is, groups that had a stake in the success of the corporation and its survival. And that obviously includes the shareholders, the owners, but it also includes the worker, the managers, the communities in which companies have their offices, their mines, their plants. So you have a stake in it. And these people believed in that earlier term that they needed to balance those interests, which meant they shared the wealth. They paid more of the corporate profits to the workers, and they invested more of the corporate profits in the development of the corporation. New products, new markets, retraining workers, paying workers more.
And they themselves did fine.
And they themselves did fine, although if you look at Charlie Wilson's pay, back in the 1950s, he ran General Motors, biggest corporation in America, $600,000 a year. Today, that would be $5 million. Today, $5 million is Piker's pay in American corporations. So CEO pay has exploded, but the living standard and the pay of middle-class workers has stagnated. It's been almost levels, gone up a little bit, but not much. And this is over 35 years, and the cost of living, and not just the cost of living, but particularly the cost of health care, cost of education, and the cost of housing has gone up enormously. And that's why the middle class is caught in the squeeze, can't keep up. Shareholder capitalism, which we moved to, says, no, the job of the CEO is just simple. Deliver maximum return to the shareholders. Make sure they get stock buybacks, high dividends, get their capital back. And what's interesting, you actually can see the numbers. Back in the 50s, a UMass economist discovered and studied the Standard & Poor's 500. Almost 50% of the company's profits went into plowed back into the business. Research and development, new markets, worker training, worker pay. Today, 91% of the profits of the major American corporations go to shareholders, and only 9% goes to growth. That's one of the reasons why we have slow growth. These are supposedly the job creators, the wealthy. They're not investing in the future of their own companies and the country the way we were back in the era of stakeholder capitalism. So that shift of mind, that shift of philosophy, has had an enormous impact on the whole country.
Is Bernie Sanders right? Do we need a political revolution?
Yes. There's no question we do, because the problem of money in politics, the problem of gridlock, the problem of dark money in politics has been developing over the last quarter century. And it is going to take a grassroots rebellion. It's not going to be fixed by the politicians. That's what Bernie is saying. And I think people are coming to understand that. We have poll after poll telling us 75, 80, 85, and one poll I saw 91% of the people in the country think the political system is broken. People are sitting around saying, oh, it's broken. We've told Washington it's broken. Now go fix it. Well, they're not going to fix it. They are actually, the people who are in the system actually doing just fine, thank you, and they like the system the way it is, or they can't figure out how to get out of it. And so it's up to us. We're going to have to change it.
Every presidential election year, people say we are, quote, at a pivotal point in our history. It has become a cliche.
We're at a crisis point in our history. Whether or not we deal with it and make it a pivotal point is up to us. We had the crisis of slavery for 20 years before we got the election of 1860. Maybe we're at 1852 right now. I'm not sure we're going to solve this in this election. I'm afraid that whoever gets elected president, and we focus so much on that personality, as if that one personality can fix everything, which is kind of crazy, it's going to take a sense that this is a deep, fundamental, structural crisis in our political system and in our economic system, and we're going to start to have to build coalitions state by state and then across the nation. It may take us a decade to do it, maybe a pivotal decade. I'm not sure this is going to be the pivotal year. That's going to depend on whether or not the people say something clearly. And say something clearly means not just in the presidency, but who gets elected to the Senate, who has control of the Senate, and whether or not the Republican grip on the House, and not just the Republican grip, but the gerrymandered, protected rump group of Republican rebels who are blocking action in the House, even against their own speaker. So this is within the party.
I'm talking
about the Freedom Caucus here. Absolutely. Unless that's fixed, it's going to be difficult for anybody, any Republican leader in the House and any president in the White House.
We live in interesting times, don't we?
We live in very interesting times.
Well, I've been speaking with a very interesting man, Hedrick Smith, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author. And what a pleasure, Mr. Smith. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Sally. Great to talk to you.